David, whether you have a few weeks old puppy or a senior who's seen multiple decades, any dog person like me knows the most valuable thing in the world is spending time with your pet.
Yep.
The farmer's dog makes it easy to keep them healthy, which can give you more quality years with your lovely dog.
Yeah, well, I've heard Farmer's Dog makes and delivers fresh, healthy dog food. And, you know, that's what everyone's looking for. It's recommended by vets, nutritionally balanced. It's made from human-grade ingredients, safe, clean kitchens. All that stuff matters.
Yeah. I mean, you love your dog. Why get the lousy food for your dog? Farmer's Dog is the best. Traditional dry and wet dog food options are extremely processed.
Sometimes
they use
dogs...
much lower quality. Yeah.
you put it in their bowl and they go, what is this kibble? And they knock it away. What is this canned goo?
Oh, yeah. I've had our dog, yeah, look at the bowl and then kind of crank its neck up and look at me. And it was like, really?
They go, really? Why don't you go first? You want a bite of this? Slop?
And it makes that sound.
Here you go, dog.
So Farmer's Dog isn't just higher quality food. They also send the food pre-portioned specifically for your dog based on their unique nutritional needs. It makes it easy to help your dog reach and stay at their ideal weight, David, and which is one of the biggest indicators of a full, healthy life. A fresh diet has been found to have all sorts of benefits, David, from healthier coat and skin, better breath, if you want to kiss your dog, and even easier digestion and smaller and better poops.
Let's look at a clip. It doesn't matter if your dog's young or old, it's always the right time to invest in their health for more happy years with your dog. Get 50% off your first box at farmersdog.com/fly.
Let the Farmer's Dog know we sent you. Use your code or click podcast after you sign up for your first box. Beep, beep,
beep. That's the next one. Here's good. Ready? Here's birds, right?
I love how soft.
That's you waking up in the morning.
See, I do the hand so it gives a sense of...
Okay, no, here's the crusher, and I shouldn't even bring this out here because you don't deserve it at all.
He's Mr. Sound Effect.
Here's the bird flying away. Then, thank you, good night.
Here's an old-fashioned dial phone for you ancients.
Okay.
Bring, 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 bring. Hello?
Yes.
Yeah. What's that?
Try to beat it and go a little louder.
Can you do this sound?
Like Predator?
It's just sort of a...
No.
Okay. Can you do this sound? No, I don't.
Can you do this? Can you do an octopus? Watch.
Can you do Anthony Hopkins in as Hannibal Lecter?
I
can smell him, Garth. I once did Garth.
I can smell him, Garth.
I played Garth, and Anthony Hopkins played Hannibal Lecter, and we would entertain the crew on a movie we did together. I can smell you, Garth. I can smell Wayne.
I'll do Garth.
No, he'd be like, oh, hey, man.
Hey, you
it's all
be
the
weird.
Jaw. It's all you got to do is the jaw. I remember Kristen Wiig at the 40th goes, why does he hold his mouth that way? She seemed a little upset.
I'm from a woman who has 100 characters.
I'm a laugh machine. I do voices and effects to make people happy.
Dana, who is married, you were married in 1950.
1957, I got married.
And,
no, I met her at 19. When she was 19, I raised her as one of my own.
That's what Elvis did with Priscilla. Huh?
Hey, Priscilla, you're 14. You got to wait 4 more years. I'll bring you in from Berlin.
When
she
was 20, she wasn't sexy anymore. Okay,
so like a Perkerdam sandwich.
Lorraine Newman is on the show today. And
yes.
Lorraine Newman, one of the OGs from SNL. Very lucky, I would say, to hit that lightning time of being on the show that just blew the fuck up.
And she has a true adorableness level. Like, there's something very sweet about her.
Very likable.
She's cute. You know, when you're in college stuff, you liked all the women. I don't know if women understand how much men find smart, funny women attractive. David?
Yeah that's
you're
true.
The Bachelor.
Tina Fey. I have a crush on Tina Fey. There's a lot of girls out there that just got that smart, funny thing, and they don't even need to be Robin Williams. They have a clever thing about them, sort of charismatic deal that I like. Now,
and that being said...
I don't understand. Where are we going?
She is one of the original members of the original cast, the rock stars of the from 1975 on. Lorne Michaels cadre of funsters.
Cadre
of funsters. That's another podcast.
But she got to work with Belushi, Aykroyd, Garrett Morris, Chevy Chase. Like, what a fun
Jane Curtin
mixed bag.
Gilda Radner. She was a Conehead, for crying out loud.
That's really what I'm going for. She's a Conehead. And I did the Coneheads movie, and I didn't get to wear a cone.
And what? What? When did you first get that, hey, wait a minute, their heads look like cones, and that's why they're called Coneheads? When did you realize that?
One second in. did anyone take long?
So let me give you a quiz, pop quiz. If their heads were oblong-shaped, what would they be called?
Oblong heads?
Yes.
Okay.
If they're...
How about this? Did you know that Arby's is because of roast beef, RB? Nope, you did not.
Well, no, slow down by three quarters. RB, rhythm and RB, RB.
RB, roast beef. That's why it's called Arby's.
Oh, got it. Okay.
I didn't know Togo's was because it's to go. I didn't know that.
Do you know Jack in the Box is called that because the owner jacked off in a box?
I did know that. No, but I did jack off in a box once. Let's look at a clip.
My mother's maiden name was McDonald's. Oh, those late nights.
Is that weird? All right, we better get to Lorraine.
Lorraine Newman. I adore her. She's so funny and so charming. I did a benefit once. She was there, brought her daughter.
Daughter's a big star, too. But on the show, don't say what one.
I won't say which one. Her daughter was like 10, and I was up there, and I was kind of at the latter stages of my teen idolness. And so later on, Lorraine, I ran into her at the West Side, a comedy club in Santa Monica, and she goes, "You were my daughter's first sort of crush on an adult figure." Mm. And that was kind of flattering.
All right, we got that story in. You guys, here's Lorraine Newman.
That's my best story.
You know what? I'll give Lorraine a compliment right off the bat, right? Ready?
Everyone loves Lorraine.
Lorraine. You have a great voice, and not that I'm flirting, but when women say what, or people say, what do you like about women? One of my weird things is not that weird, but aside from the basics, oh, I like this and this, that all guys like, a voice is very interesting because it's very unique on every person. And even as you get older, people recognize your voice. Like, they know mine from The Emperor's New Groove, which was a cartoon movie I did a long time ago. And so when I'm in 7-Eleven,
No touchy.
Everybody
in my family, all my kids know that reference.
Oh, they know
did
that
reference. Did you ever think?
No, but I was telling that whole story just to get to see if that they knew my movie. You have
a recognizable voice, David. You have a recognizable.
And she has a good voice that's right off
Lorraine
the bat.
Lorraine has a very seductive, smooth, feminine voice.
You know where it really came in handy? E. Buzz Miller. Weren't you the girlfriend or something?
Yeah, Christy Christina, a character that I never understood why anybody thought that was funny. I never, ever thought that character was funny. I just was like, you know, well, they gave me the part. I'm going to do the best I can. And they even made this kind of piece that gave me those boobs with the, you know, the little bullet nipples, because it was actually a rubber piece that went, you know, under the leotard.
So it's a weird meeting that they probably don't have anymore.
Who knows?
Yeah. Well, okay, Lorraine, when you do a part like that, I think SNL people want to, and we can talk about anything, but on the SNL tip, when Dane and I have been in that mix, and it's probably similar when you were there, but is that Danny Aykroyd is writing something up, or someone else, they walk by, knock on your door and go, "Hey, do you want to be in this thing? We're writing it up. It's Tuesday night where you play." Is that kind of how it goes?
The way that it went with you is exactly the way it went with us. I remember listening to Andy Samberg on a radio show, and he talked about the schedule, like Monday, meet the host, pitch some ideas. Lauren says, work on that. Everybody works until Wednesday.
Yeah.
She'll read through, you know, the whole thing, choosing what, you know, build the sets.
Yeah, and you guys didn't have, they probably ironed out a lot of the problems. You probably had a little rougher as far as.
Oh, yeah.
It's really
We didn't have WordPress. I wasn't there during being online and stuff. So I did go back to host at one point. Bill Hader and John Mulaney were there. And they're like, "Oh, we'll click up this sketch that you did from Dress that was cut." in 1987. Wow. So they have everything in a database.
I wouldn't even think of that.
And I, you know, when you never know what's going to land with people. So I had done a sitcom with Mickey Rooney, and he's the freakiest person ever, you know, hysterical.
I have a Mickey Rooney story, but go ahead.
Mickey Rooney.
And so
then I just took Mickey's lines, which some sketch Bonnie and Terry Turner were doing, old-fashioned movie stars. So I just told them stuff Mickey had said. I was the number one star in the world. You hear me? Bang. The world. So I just did Mickey's lines, and I had prosthetic makeup. So I go there. And Bill Hader and John Mulaney, they just go, well, our favorite thing you've ever done is Mickey Rooney. So just one of those things.
Well, that's a great impression of him. What is the language code on this show?
Oh, you can say whatever you want.
What the motherfuck? What were you saying?
So I did a movie that I had had nightmares that had been released and I would wake up sweating. And it was called Revenge of the Red Baron. And it was the kind of thing where I said to my agent, just ask for this amount of money. They'll never agree to it and it'll be over. Well, they agreed to it. And it was a Roger Corman. It was a Roger Corman movie, okay? And I'm thinking, well, you know, Catherine Bigelow started with Roger Corman. But no, this was some schlepper that had been cutting his movies for 20 years. But Tobey Maguire played my son. Clifty Young was in it. And it was written by Mike McDonald from The Groundlings and Mad TV.
Okay, so it could be good. So,
and there were some Groundlings in it. And so I thought,
kind of safe.
Mickey Rooney would say those things, you know, I was the biggest star. And then as he's hitching his trousers, when I was having my single and he was in my peripheral vision, he would spit in his hand and make masturbatory gestures and then squirt the spit out of his hand.
What the fuck?
Like it was semen.
Talk about painting a picture, Lorraine.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh,
yes.
Man.
Yeah, can you imagine?
I thought I was the only one that did that on sets. That's always a real fun
one. I know we shouldn't speak ill of the dead.
No, not at all. He was just the most bitter person. It was so funny. He had a .38 revolver with him. And he would pull it out sometimes. This script is caw-caw. And he's kind of waving it around.
She's reliving
say,
in her head.
I would go to work. It would be Rockefeller Center on the 6th floor, 6 years before I got on the 8th floor. And I'd hear him down the hallway. You know, Judy Garland never owned a car. And then he would get really close to your face because they pumped her so full of drugs they killed her. He would talk there was no more air left. And once you've worked with Mickey, I mean, Nathan and I had so many stories about working with Mickey, but yeah, he could be crude. He said he had an idea for a show where every character's name was a swear word and he would act it out for like 20 minutes. Hello, Mrs. Fuck. I'm Mr. Shit. How are you, motherfucker? And it went on for like 20 minutes.
Dude, I could get that sold.
Well, I actually saw him say to an actor, have you accepted Jesus Christ as your personal savior? Hey, would you look at the tits on that one? You know, it was like, right, you know.
And he was phoning it in. He was in Sugar Babies on Broadway doing the sitcom. So we'd have to act to this guy who was like 30 years old, but was 5 feet tall. All week long, we would rehearse with him. And Mickey would have giant cue cards. And he would always had cash because he'd been broke for decades. And Sugar Babies, he was making money on the sitcom. So he'd pull out like $5,000 and put it right up to your face and go, think I can afford lunch?
Oh, my God.
There's too many stories. We don't want to make it all about
Mickey. I'm so curious. What were you doing on the 6th floor for, did you say, 4 years?
Dana.
I was doing, really long story short, I was doing stand-up in San Francisco. NBC people came up. I had kind of this innocent Timmy Lassie look going on. I was kind of funny, whatever. So I got a deal with NBC, a holding deal, $50,000 up front against things I would be doing. I was on the Marie Osmond variety show as a sketch player for like a day. Then all of a sudden I got a call from NBC. You're going to play Mickey Rooney's grandson on a sitcom in New York. And Nathan Lane had auditioned in LA. We flew back out on a 747. George Burns was playing cards. Anyway, everything was surreal. And it was in Rockefeller Center on the 6th floor. And then I would go up to the 8th floor on Thursdays watching them run through the thing. Joe Piscopo and Eddie Murphy, and going, oh man, I want to be up here. But I was cast as a straight man for many years because I just had, and I had no confidence. I had ambition, but I had no real confidence, which kind of comes full circle a little bit to your story. When I'm watching Saturday Night Live from 75 to 80, you were the Beatles, you were rock stars, you were more than comedians because you were the first. And I was so in awe of the show, the idea that I would be on it. And I don't know how you felt, because you get on and the show's not the show yet. It's still, maybe it'll get canceled.
Yeah.
So can you just talk a little bit about that very, very bare beginning? Were you there for the first show of the 75 season? You're there, and who's with you? Is everyone there? Chevy?
Everybody's there. In the last, the 11th hour, it was between Billy and Chevy.
Which
killed me, because I had never seen Billy, except he was one of the first people I met. My first friend was Gilda Radner, and she took me up to a recording session for a National Lampoon album, the one that's called That's Not Funny, That's Sick. So I'm on that album, but I meet Harold Ramis and Chris Guest and Glendale Murray and Bill Murray. Jeez. And so I got a sense of what Billy had, and then I saw his audition. I'm thinking, oh boy, you know. And then they chose Chevy.
Wait, they waited
that
long?
They couldn't have both of them.
that's what I thought. That's what I had hoped.
But they had Belushi and Aykroyd already.
Yes.
And they felt like,
well, now they have 32 cast members. They could have.
How many
was it with you guys?
Seven.
So explosive. I mean, I really want to talk through this a lot, but just for a second, I just, because of everyone's love of Gilda Radner and your whole cast, but she just seems so likable. I mean, was she just really fun and just a genuine, I mean, all of you and Jane, you know, I don't know, there's just a likability to that whole cast, but speak to Gilda for a second.
Well, she was a really good person.
That's nice
and,
to know.
she was the person that, you know, made a fuss over your birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And just...
very sweet.
You know, she and I found ourselves in some pickles, which I talk about in my book.
Oh, and what is the name of the book?
Maybe
we'll get a big following.
Well, yes. May You Live in Interesting Times. And, you know, nice. One was that when we did the New Orleans, Live from New Orleans special, the technology, you know, for doing green screen and shifting from one set to another was like a minute old. And everything that could have gone wrong did. But the days before, during the rehearsal process, Gilda and I were put into a room in a building in a part of town. We did not know where we were. We were scared to go out because we were literally getting mobbed.
Yeah.
And we were in this room with nothing but chairs and a trash can with one of those lids that you step on a pedal and the lid goes up.
Mm.
They forgot about us for 4 hours.
Oh, God.
We're in this room for 4 hours, and Gilda turned that trash can into a puppet, because that's the kind of person she was.
Sweet.
You know?
Nice.
And God, there's just so many times that she and I, for some reason, you know, but we also just, you know, would have breakfast together before we went into work. And
You know, I think it comes across, and I don't know if Lauren honed this later, or you think about, there's the funny part, there's the likability part, and then there's the charisma, and finally there's how might they work together, you know? Will they, you know, kind of like a sitcom, you know, you have this key piece, this piece, this piece. But I think everyone who's gone through that, you never lose a certain kind of bond with your cast, especially unknown people, not famous at all, no money at all, going on this television show. And I was 10 years later in 86, but you still feel that esprit de corps with your original cast if you run into Dan Aykroyd or whoever, or, you know.
It's an extraordinary experience. As you know, it is an extraordinary experience. And I always liken it to a lifeboat where, you know, you all survive something. Some of us didn't. But you all survive something that was very extraordinary. I was on Dennis Miller's show a couple of weeks ago, and we talked about the very same thing. And he mentioned the movie The Right Stuff, which I think of this scene every time people ask about the camaraderie of the cast and the closeness, where they're backstage. I think Lyndon Johnson is introducing them.
I've seen the movie many times, yes.
Yeah, that scene where they're backstage and they're all just kind of looking at one another like, I guess we did this thing that nobody else has ever done.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously I'm not comparing our show to space exploration, right. But you know, it was the
better.
Same feeling.
Well, I would say, you know, without that analogy, but in terms of show business, especially as the show grew live, I remember just doing a cold opening in one as the president or whatever. And just the whole weight of the show is on you. And then there's that Joe Disco, five seconds. And you're just...
Five seconds!
You're like floating, and then you're just reading the card and hoping that you're articulating. That is a lot of pressure, you know, I think in show business. I don't know if there's any more, anything that currently exists live like that.
And they weren't ready.
We came from that background. I'm sorry, what did you say, David?
Everything I say is important, so everyone has to listen closely.
Keep going.
I was just saying that when Dana and I were on, there was a chance you could get famous, or being on it, you'd get a little bump in fame, even if you suddenly didn't click or whatever. But with you guys, you seem like a very sweet woman, and Gilda and all those people together, and not knowing that it's such a whopper, and getting the biggest hit out of it that anyone's gotten must mess with your head, like you were saying, just walking the street or getting breakfast, and you feel like, do I deserve this, or why? What's going on here, and why are so many people thinking this is so great? Even though you think it's fun, but I don't think anyone can prep for that.
Well, you kind of, I mean, since you're part of this era, it really, when you think about the evolution of comedy from Laugh-In, and Lauren used to say, it's fucking Carol Burnett. I'm sure he loves Carol Burnett, but he had a thing about breaking in scenes when we were there. He didn't want you to break.
Yeah.
But the rock and roll, George Carlin, Richard Pryor thing had started, and then it all of a sudden this sketch show manifests itself with this kind of post-1960s, early 70s comedy sensibility, right?
Well, it was alt comedy. That's what I've come to realize is that, yes, you had your show of shows and Carol Burnett and, you know, Laugh-In, but those were really mainstream and written by writers that were not our age, did not have our references or sensibility. Mm-hmm. And this was truly an amalgam of a bunch of really great minds like Michael O'Donohue and Herb Sargent and, you know, Franken and Davis and all these amazing people whose tone and style had never been seen before. And then you also have the references that we all came with. I mean, you know, I came with these characters that I had done at the Groundlings. And so you talk about the format. That's exactly what I came from, is doing a sketch, running off stage in the dark, changing my costume, coming back in the dark, lights come up and you go. I mean, that's what I came from. And that's, you know, Jane came from The Proposition. You know, Gilda came from Second City and the Lampoon Show.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we all had that background.
And now for a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Let's talk about hustle culture. You know, the whole rise and grind, go big or go home thing. It's a lifestyle that may not be for you, but one that your money can handle thanks to Betterment. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. How? Their automated technology optimizes your investments again and again. With Betterment, your money is taking ice baths at 5 a.m. while you get your well-deserved rest. Your money downs protein smoothies and automatically reinvests your dividends all before you head out the door. Your money's a workaholic, but you don't have to be, because you've got Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed. Getting engaged is special for so many reasons. You know, you plan the perfect proposal. You've probably been proposed to a lot, Dana. Celebrate the love.
I proposed to myself a couple times.
Far. I do it in the mirror just to see.
Do you take yourself here?
You look forward to the love you'll build for the rest of your lives. The only part that's not so special, shopping for an engagement ring. You don't know what you're doing. If you don't know what you're doing, which most guys don't, you got to hustle over to BlueNile.com. That's where they come in.
That BlueNile.com is the original online jeweler. Since 1999, they've helped millions of couples create their perfect engagement ring.
With Blue Nile, you can create a bigger, more brilliant piece than you can imagine at a price you won't find at a traditional jeweler.
Nope, they're committed to ensuring that the highest ethical standards are observed when sourcing diamonds and jewelry, David.
Blue Nile also offers a diamond price guarantee, which means that they can usually meet or beat a competitor's price on a comparable diamond. That's what you don't want to find out later, that you spent way too much, because they cost a lot anyway. I mean, they're diamonds.
Yeah, you're off the reservation when you're going door to door and going into all these jewelry stores and they're selling you, and then you have a much better way to do this. You don't want to find out that you paid multiple months' salary on a ring. Right, you could have gotten at a much better deal. I mean, I'm just going to say it. Blue Nile's a no-brainer.
When you make a lifelong commitment, so does Blue Nile, you get guaranteed service and repair for life.
Yes.
And don't worry, your secret's safe. Every Blue Nile order is insured and arrives in packaging that won't give it away, because that can ruin it. Sometimes if I was getting a diamond ring, I would make sure they put on the outside porn so you wouldn't think it was a diamond ring.
I always have it say big, non-surprising diamond ring. That'd be on the outside of the package. No, you want it hidden in secret so that the loved one opens it and is doubly excited because they didn't see it coming.
They offer 100% satisfaction guarantee with guaranteed free shipping and returns. Mm-hmm. Right now, you can get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more with code FLY at BlueNile.com. That's $50 off with code FLY at BlueNile.com.
Let's say it again. That's $50 off with code FLY at BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com. Did you, were you the first or one of the first on television to do the Valley Girl voice kind of, or it?
It feels like
that. I mean, because that is still around and it's organic. Yeah.
You're welcome.
How did you hatch that? Where did that come from? That was in your early Groundling time?
I had always noticed, even in high school, that the people from the Valley spoke differently. And my twin brother was a surfer. Funny. He still is, actually. And so I'd go to the beach with him every once in a while. And, you know, there was this whole thing about the Valley surfers versus the Malibu surfers and the West Side surfers. And, you know, but I did, my ear picked up, because I'd always loved dialects. I'd always picked up on them. There was, you know, when I was 4 years old, there was an Orange Julius stand in Westwood Village run by this Scottish couple, who would say things to me like, "Would you like your hot dog steamed or grilled?" And I would just, you know, grab onto that kind of stuff.
So you were doing that at age four?
No, I wasn't doing it. I was noticing it.
Yeah.
You know, but then I did start doing dialects very young. Mm-hmm. But I started hearing that Valley accent and realizing that it was a very unique accent.
So many people have used it. I mean, it's just...
Yeah, well, that's become the whole thing.
Ubiquitous.
I'm familiarized me with your take on it. Did you do the thing, "Oh my God," or how did you process it? That became later. I don't know who did that, but
no, I think that Moon Unit did "Oh my God."
Okay.
You know, I break down that dialect in my book, and
which is called "You Should Have an Interesting Life," or what?
May you live an interesting
time. May you live an interesting life. Right now, on everywhere books are sold, Lorraine Newman.
Audible. And you know, contractions like "wouldn't," "shouldn't," or "couldn't" would become "wouldn't," "shouldn't," and "couldn't." You know, and ing endings were "en," so I'm going there, and things like that. It's just, and then there was also words like "bitchin'" and "super" that came before, you know, like in my monologue in the Godfather Group Therapy sketch, I said, you know, I had to get super reflective. You know, it was that was the language and the dialect that I kind of
Yeah, that is still around.
That
by
was
way.
Like super reflective. Can you do that again?
I had to get super reflective.
God, even that like voice grainy, that's out there too with every girl on The Bachelor. But
yes,
Lorraine, what is underneath that? I just want to know for a second the process. I mean, like someone who talks like that, is it an elitism, or is it trying to be cool, or what is kind of behind someone who would change their voice like that? I'm just thinking out loud. Like,
I don't think people change their voice to it. I don't think they change their voice to it. I think that it becomes ubiquitous.
Yeah.
And is there a charm to it? A sexuality to it? I'm just wondering where it came from. But anyway, we may never figure
well,
that out exactly.
Doesn't charm me one fucking bit.
Yeah.
But
because the stoner dude, the male version was like most like
Spicoli.
I don't know what you're
yeah.
talking about, man. This is crazy, dude.
But
that
also,
was like
if
from
she
being,
does that, then. Everything, even Moon Unit, it's all sort of a spin-off of that ground, laying the groundwork, like, you know, someone doing Lorne the first time or Christopher Walken, and everyone's kind of doing that version, but mm-hmm. you're laying, everyone's like, oh, that's a thing now. So they're kind of playing off that one and building on it. So
yeah,
that's
Frank
the hard
Zappa,
thing is to come up with the code. Like
Frank Zappa?
He loved that character. He absolutely loved it and wanted to do something with it, and it just never happened. And he's also, he was from Cucamonga. He was from the Valley.
Cucamonga.
So he absolutely, you know.
Frank Zappa. I did him once on the show, and Michael Thomas did such a great job with my makeup, and I came out of the room, and Eric Clapton was in the hallway. Sorry, folks, name dropping, but that's what
that's
Saturday
okay.
Night Live does.
Michael Thomas. Oh,
he was my guy, brilliant, funny, so fucking funny.
He made
and
vampire teeth for me.
Did he? Oh,
yeah.
Michael Thomas, for everyone listening, was one of the quintessential brilliant makeup artists, and he could move so fast and do little things, and you'd sit in the chair and you'd get more and more into character, and he would keep doing stuff. And then he had such a funny ear. I was doing a show a few years later, and I was asked to do all these classic impressions like Groucho Marx. It was a Easter special. I was Rich Little, and I didn't really have him. And so he taught me Jack Benny, and then I would go out and do Jack Benny. And
oh
he said,
my
this
God.
Is how you do Groucho. So he also had an ear, and he loved monsters, but God rest his soul.
Yeah.
You know, loved him. I'm so glad you had a connection with him. He was such a great.
Did you start the Groundlings, or you were part of the founding people?
Yeah, one of the founding members.
That's
yeah.
great. That's so cool.
Wow.
And that was in LA?
Who knew? Yeah. Who knew?
So SNL is like the Groundlings, but suddenly when you leave, everyone has seen it. It's so funny. You can do a sketch, walk in your room, and someone could text you and say, great one, I was in Oklahoma, I just saw it. And you're like, it's such a mind blower.
Yeah, there's a thing going on in the Groundlings now where people would stay in the main company and they just wouldn't leave. And even though it's like, you know, they're on series television now, they just don't leave. So that what they started to do to get them to leave was to do a retrospective and a celebration to just, you know,
and, to get them out the door.
And I always marveled at the technology because they had the you know, ability to film their sketches. And when we did our 40th anniversary, the people from the 1970s, we just did straight improv because there was we had never filmed any of our sketches. But later on, of course, everybody had, you know, early Melissa McCarthy, early Kristen Wiig, early Maya Rudolph, you know. It was just great stuff to see.
I wish that when I was there, and it was sort of with all of us, if you missed a sketch, then you waited for the rerun 6 months later. And if you missed it again, you might have been in the best of in the summer. But that's a long shot. And now I don't get to see the show as much, so if Monday on Yahoo News or wherever you are on your computer,
Hulu,
sometimes it just says, here's a sketch from, and they give you the best one, and then you go, oh, the show is pretty funny still, even though who knows how much of the show, it's always like hit and miss, but that keeps it alive. I think that's a big part of why it's still out there and still killing it.
Well, now it's 1.6 billion YouTube hits last year for their season, which is extraordinary.
Oh, wow.
And then
it's now
I don't know if it still is, but Peacock, I think you can watch it live at 8:30 on the West Coast. So it's evolved in so many ways. The interesting part about you and Gilda and Jane being the first women, and there's all these, you know, the society has evolved. And we were talking to Anna Gasteyer, who's another great performer. And just the idea that how many women have emerged in such a big way in the last 20 years, in some of the ones you were mentioning. But it was three on your cast. Then there was those intermediate casts. I know Julia Louis-Dreyfus was on. We had Jan Hooks, Nora Dunn, and Victoria Jackson.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
Jan those Hooks, she's supernatural.
I love
as good
that
as
reaction
anyone.
To Jan Hooks. That's such
so,
a good...
So unbelievably funny.
Yeah.
Oh,
just,
God.
Just... balls out funny.
Oh God.
And funny off stage. We had so many laughs. We would just get, you know, when you get so tired in a stressful job like that, you get laughing fits.
Oh, yeah.
And like your little kids. I remember one time Phil had a suit on, the late, great Phil Hartman, and we called him the glue because he was like our Danny Aykroyd or something.
Yeah.
What do you need this week? You know, and he didn't even, it was effortless for Phil. But Jan and I just saw his tie or something. And we were just, it's like we were stoned. We were so tired.
Oh, sure. That's a great place to be, though. Don't you love it?
It is. You're just so weak. You can't not laugh.
I have a question about Lorraine about, you know, we had in our run, Chris Farley, you guys had John Belushi and Jen. Chris looked up to John so much. Because they were sort of, you know, bigger guys and very, very physical. I remember even in wardrobe, he would find pants for a sketch and he'd look in it and it would say Belushi. They still had them.
Oh, my God.
And he'd wear them and then he'd wear his pants over those because he wanted to have anything. And at one point I said, Chris, you're as good as Belushi. I mean, I hate to sound like blasphemous, but I go,
oh, he is.
We all love Belushi. And I go, Chris, you're at the point where when we go down the street, it's you're so good that I would put you in the same.
And he would never buy that.
Never buy it.
And it was hard.
Here's the thing that I have to say about all of that, because when I hear people say your cast was the best cast, I say no. The cast that was on when you were an adolescent is the best cast.
Yeah, that
because
is
they've
kind
always
right.
had great casts. Always had great casts and great writers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, guys, your years had you guys and the people around you, there have always been great casts. And people that don't even know ours.
They said we're bad, and then later they say we're good. It's so funny that when we're there, they're like, you missed the good people. They were just here. You guys suck. God. And then later they
Saturday
go.
Saturday Live dead. It we like when funny sense. Who went to the left? That's never ended.
Worst. Lauren goes, Saturday Night dead. It's going to get every year. It'll be a headline.
That's a good impression. I cannot
let Dana do it. He's the guy.
The problem with the critics, they're like really into their own thing. It's that thing of like, you know, you have to be really light on your feet. It'd be nice if this sketch was like, you know, funny would be a good thing. We love Lauren's sarcasm.
Did he overcome saying things like absolutely or no?
We definitely have no. Don't misunderstand me. Mostly would be exactly if you were telling him something exactly. Well, you know, he was always the same, but now that we have data, now we have almost 50 years of this show, it's hard to imagine another human individual navigating it like Lorne. He was so good with the network and all that part of it.
Oh, yes.
He was very good with the hosts, and he also was, I think because he's a very, very smart guy, he could get all those Ivy League guys to come in and respect him. You know, the Harvard guys, and you know, because I went to San Francisco State, but everyone, you know, they would all giggle when I would mispronounce a word and read through, and I go, "You fuckers, I'll get you on the stage."
That was intimidating. I don't know if you guys had great writers, Lorraine, but it got very Harvard-y when I was there from Scottsdale Community College, and I could just tell it was very clear. I was in over my head, and it takes a while to figure out, like, I don't know if you wrote, but I think you did, but how to write a sketch or how to fit in with these guys and just get to the level. I just want to go and read through and say, I don't want everyone to go, what the fuck? Who wrote this? I just want it to be like, oh, we're not doing it, but it's sort of mixed into the bunch, you know? Because sometimes I would write something and I didn't know how to write and I just got that yellow pad and they would be like, that's 8 pages too long. I'm like, well, no one is talking to me.
No one tells you anything. Was that the same when you were there in the 70s? You have to learn it yourself or ask other cast members.
Absolutely.
But
nobody tells you anything. And I didn't quite get that it would be good if I were to align myself with a writer who could really get me. But fortunately, it worked out that way anyway. And O'Donohue and Schiller and Rosie Schuster, they really wrote beautifully for me. And, you know, I brought us some of the material that I had done at the Groundlings I brought there. But that was basically how it worked, because I did not know how. The things I did in the Groundlings were what we now call in ones or down lefts, which were just character monologues.
Yeah.
I am a shitty improviser. Shitty. You know, so you know, the, I don't know how to write a sketch.
People think we improvise on Saturday Night Live, but you don't improvise.
No.
Yeah, people think you do.
But
yeah.
but backstage you do. You know, just for a second, Rosie Schuster came back, Lauren's ex-wife, one of them, and she was assigned to me. I'd just done this character in my stand-up. I didn't do it all day long. I never wore a dress. Was this church lady person.
Oh, my
God. And so we sat for a couple weeks, you know, making the talk show out of it. And she was the one who said, church chat, you know? And she was very, very good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What a really good
writer. Yeah.
Really beautiful.
Yeah. So that Lauren loves that when the writers in the cast get together. And I actually talked to a young cast member recently who wanted to talk to me. I won't say, you know, who it was, who's currently on the show and struggling a little bit with the process. I said, well, find whatever your rhythm of your character is, you know, collect your hooks or what makes it funny and crunchy to you. Seek out a writer that has influence and maybe would want. So at the ground floor, while the sketch is being written, your rhythms are being integrated. Don't wait where they've written jokes and then you're trying to put your character into it.
Exactly.
Make sure you do it together. So it sounds like you had that with Michael Donahue and Rosie and all the rest. Yeah. That's one that Lauren loves that thing too. It's like, it's like the Congress and the Senate are getting along or something. He doesn't want one side to dominate too much.
Yeah, well, Conan O'Brien talks about not knowing how to write a sketch and how he really started out by just like telling somebody stories and people would say, yeah, you should write that as a sketch.
Yeah.
But, you know, the idea that any writer would come there not knowing how to write a sketch.
Well, I auditioned to be on the show and then they say, me and Rob Schneider, and they go, you're hired, but they liked your stand-up, but they liked the writing of it. So, which is good and bad news because they go, he wants to be a writer performer. And then they go, oh, maybe Chevy was, I don't know who was, but
he was just hired as a writer. Chevy was just hired
really?
As a writer. Yes. Garrett and Chevy were hired as writers.
Oh, I did not know that. That's cool.
Yes.
And now, how long till Billy came on? Was it 3 years?
No, actually it was
right away,
second
was it?
Year.
Oh, second
yeah, because
year.
Chevy did like one
Chevy
and a
left.
Half seasons.
Oh, yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
whatever.
Okay.
He was on the cover of Time or whatever he was. He just blew up from the show.
Yeah.
And then he always regretted leaving. You know, when he would come back and host, he talked about wishing he'd stayed longer.
Sure, for know? Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's
I think
hard
once
to
you
get
leave
that
it,
again.
You can never go back, you know.
Once you what?
Once you leave SNL, you're never going to do.
I thought you said once you diva. You never come back.
Oh, funny.
I was thinking, that's good.
That's better than what I just said. So I did say that, Lorraine.
Okay.
Once you diva, but once you leave, you can't go back to that experientially. And it haunts your whole career or life in some ways because it's New York. It's the grease paint. There's a horse in the show and someone's juggling and it's all chaotic and weird. And there's just nothing quite like that intensity of
or
SNL.
Or how hard it is. And you go, I could do that. And then you leave, I'm sure Chevy after years, like, and he sees the show stays huge and even huger. And you're like, fuck, that was fun. I was in that. I was in the mix.
Yeah. That's the thing is sketch comedy is so fun.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, when I was back for the 40th, just doing sketches.
Oh, right.
So goddamn fun.
Oh yeah. It's just,
and the people you get to work with are always super sharp, funny.
Yes.
You get to look around and go, God damn, all these people are great. And then they go on to do great things and you go, shit, everyone was good. I was not wrong.
It feels like it's more pressure now, but you guys, when did you for yourself, Lorraine, so you're on the show and the show's not the show yet, but you're becoming rock stars. When did, you know, I think the audience starts to discover, and they discovered Chevy first, probably because he was on Update, had an N1 at home base. It was like very potent Chevy. But when do you feel like, when did you personally get comfortable, you feel? Were you comfortable right away? It took me, I feel like 60 shows.
60?
To get, I'd say I was better after the third season, fourth season. It took me a long, I mean, to be really having fun, to go back full circle to like just enjoying it because everything is picking and wigs and going and then the cards and changing to get relaxed. Did you feel you had a breakthrough with a certain character? I mean, was it the Coneheads or any sketch you remember where I've got this, we're winning, we're a winning team, we're rock stars. Or maybe it was immediate for you guys, I don't know.
No, I was very young and I was very inexperienced.
You were like 21 or something?
No, I was 23, but I was a very young 23.
That's young.
Yeah.
I was a young 23. That's what I have to say about that. Yeah. But okay. I was very inexperienced and I did not have a lot of confidence. And so I can't say that I ever got to a place where I felt comfortable. When I was doing something either that I wrote or that I really had an affinity for and felt like I could score with, those were great times. I mean, Marilyn Miller wrote this Barbra Streisand song for me. And I was just thinking about it the other day because someone was talking about, I think it was the documentary on Mr. Kelly's, and that Barbra Streisand does the intro on that. And I was thinking, you know, it was a complicated song. I was the only one who could sing a little bit better than everybody else of the girls.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember afterwards that kind of explosive applause when it was over. And as I'm bowing and my legs are shaking, you know, it was such a great moment and experience to have. But I didn't have a lot of those, you know.
Yeah.
Did you, like singing, did you sit with someone? We had Cheryl. We had Cheryl and Mark Shaman.
Mark Shaman worked on the show?
He did. Well, I was there for a couple of years. Then he went off and did movies. But he was there with Cheryl.
I didn't know that.
This is just for people listening. If there's a musical number, it's so much fun to sit down. Well, let's just say Cheryl was so wonderful. And she could just play anything. And you had a song you wanted to do. I think she said she did Black Magic Woman. Is that Santana? I don't know who did that.
Yes, it is.
She played the chords backwards for the Church Chat theme. Stuff like that.
Oh my God, how brilliant.
But
wow.
She would help you with notes and know you were going to harmonize and we're playing cowboys and we're harmonizing Woody Harrelson, and she would help you. And I'll speak to you. I want to hear your experiences. I had one freaky thing of I was in a booth with Willie Nelson. He had his old guitar. And then he was learning a song, Maybe I Didn't, and I'm seeing him learn it in real time.
Oh, wow.
But you have those kinds of moments. In terms of the movies, the hosts that came along in those 5 years, does anyone stick out?
The hosts?
The hosts, because you're meeting, like you had a lot of
stars come through. It's unreal.
Richard Pryor. I had met Richard Pryor when I was 14 because he was friends with my sister.
Oh,
and he was playing the Troubadour guys, the Troubadour. Wow. He was playing the Troubadour. And
West Hollywood.
So, so I met him when I was 14. So when he came to host the show, I was like, I'm Tracy Newman's little sister. Do you remember me? You know? And he was so great to me. He was just,
sweet.
Always, there are three people who were my main influences: Eve Arden, Madeline Kahn, and Richard Pryor. Those are like the holy trinity for me.
Madeline Kahn's another monster. Did she come host?
Twice.
Oh, how great.
Yeah.
That's the exact example of what happens to you on Saturday Night Live. So you have this mentor who doesn't know, and then you're in a sketch with them.
I know. It's
all surreal, right?
Dana,
it's so
what
great.
About Lorraine? Did I read that you were stopped? I mean, this is where your career just hits a zenith, when you got stopped by John and Yoko. Is that true?
Yeah, I was coming from a photo session with Francisco Scavullo.
Jesus.
Makeup for the read-through with Jill Clayburgh. And out of my, I'm walking through the lobby of 30 Rock, and through my peripheral vision, I see these two forms, and they come into focus.
Holy
and
shit.
It's John and Yoko.
God damn.
And as they pass in front of me, John goes, "Hi, Lorraine." You know, not a hi. Hi, wow. Lorraine. You know?
Wow.
And I was like Lou Costello in those series, you know, like Frankenstein. was like, exactly. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's exactly what I was like.
There were so many intersections that you happened to have my cast with different people, and Paul McCartney and so forth. But yeah, it was always bittersweet. I would love to have met John Lennon.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Would love to.
Well, Christopher Lee was the person that I was very excited to meet. I had lobbied for him to be a host for 3 years, but it wasn't until he was in a James Bond movie that he
that
hosted.
They put him in.
And God, was he a great host. Of course, he immediately said, "I do not want to do Dracula." He's like,
he's your Steven Seagal.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to play Coco the Clown. I don't want to do Dracula. It's not something
I feel Lorraine, like I was just to. Saying that because when Stephen hosted, I think I got a bad rap of being quoted in sometimes these stories that's our worst host. But the truth is, I did like Steven Seagal and I liked his movies. And I was just trying, I was saying he was sort of known to others as a bad host. He wouldn't roll with the flow. And I think both of you know that the best thing to That's do if you're rough. A host is to just put your hands up and go, what do you want me to do? And if you're Christopher Lee, we'll make a Dracula. We won't make you look like an asshole. This will be a funny version. People will like it. And he wouldn't do any karate monologue. And we wanted to do kung fu fighting or something stupid. And he just was latching onto wanting to be cool. And I got what he was saying. He's like, I have an image. And it was just too hard to trust us and talk him out of that. That's all. He wasn't a bad guy to me.
I didn't mean to imply that he was difficult. He was absolutely great.
Sure. But you know, a lot of people don't want to do.
He just didn't want to do that.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. A lot of people just say they get on there or the music. We had that a lot. The music doesn't want to do their hit song. And you want to go, you get two songs. You could do whatever you want on the second one. But the first one, can you please do your hit? You know.
It's kind of when a host comes in, like, you know, there's an athlete, or we had George Steinbrenner, a billionaire, owns the New York Yankees. So George Steinbrenner, so he's got kind of, you know, he's a billionaire. He's George, and Al Franken pitched him something to the effect in the sketch he would be on all fours in a diaper with a dog collar.
It's funny.
Just, you're like, Al, he's not going to do that.
Well, I think it's really funny.
Remember Conan was saying at dinner the other night, we saw Conan, he was saying he and Bob Odenkirk had to go pitch to George Steinbrenner, and he fucking hated it and said, I'm not doing that shit, get out of here. And they leave, and Lauren goes, give it another try. What? Go back in?
Yeah,
they go,
Lauren
we have to go back in.
Oh, my God.
I did a sketch once. It was during Matthew...
Broderick?
Married to Sarah Jessica Parker.
Broderick.
Matthew Broderick. So we were all bare-chested in diapers in the sketch. And so the sketch bombs. I mean, it really bombs. I mean, it's dead quiet. And then you have to walk off. It's too busy. No one puts a robe. You're walking through 8H, the audience with a big diaper on and a sketch that just shit itself. And then I looked at an audience member and did a little like, hey, how you doing? A little wave. And they looked away.
No!
They were like embarrassed.
That was my first season. They looked away.
Shit. Oh, the pain.
The pain.
I know.
God.
It's talking about humiliation. That's what comedy is.
Dude,
I mean,
in
you
a
know,
sketch, if it's bombing, it's the grossest feeling to sit there looking at the cards, your next line's coming, you're like, we should end it right now. It's going nowhere.
They're not buying. It takes your chances.
The sickest if it kills a dress, and then on air, you're like, what happened?
I know. That's the worst. Well, that's the alchemy of the show, you know?
Shit.
Well, it's sometimes the dress show is so hot and you're like, I don't like this.
Yeah.
Because then the air show is not so hot and a lot of invited guests. And then all of a sudden the same and it's a half the laugh. And then you've gotten spoiled with the dress show. But sometimes the air audience was the best. So you never knew. But it was a high wire act. Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas.
Loves expanding your business, evolving your passions. We push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at dell.com/welcometonow. Now, this is DraftKings.
Stockholder, just a disclosure, I own DraftKings shares.
You don't own all of it, do you?
I took a taste.
I did a party for this guy at Gillette Stadium for his wife's birthday. And I did my crummy stand-up act. In full disclosure. I play DraftKings when I do fantasy football. So I do have it. Rewind it back to the days of chillaxing on the beach and all-day fun with spring break on DraftKings Casino. Play exclusive games like Fan Fave Rocket. The excitement is endless, the vibes are right, and the cash prizes
could be
huge.
Could be huge.
You like money? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Dan, do you like money?
Oh, I don't know. I could take it or leave it, but I like DraftKings, I'll tell you that much.
Some people don't like money. If you don't like money, don't play. New players, start playing with just $5 and get 100 back instantly in casino credits. Download the app and use code FOTW to book your one-way ticket to fun with DraftKings Casino. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Listen up, Dana. Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. 21 plus.
Physically present in Connecticut, Michigan, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, West Virginia only. Void in Ontario. Eligibility and other restrictions apply. One per opted-in new customer. $5 wage required max. $100 in casino credits awarded, which require one-time playthrough within 168 hours. See terms at casino.com, DraftKings.com/promos. Restrictions apply.
Lorraine, I don't want to keep you forever, but do you ever get mad and say Meps?
Say what?
Meps. 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 What are you saying, Coneheads? Meps.
It's Mebs. Oh. M-E-B-S. Mebs. Wow. M-E-B.
I've been saying it wrong. I've been saying it wrong every time I stub my toe.
That's all right.
I was in Coneheads. I was in the Coneheads movie.
Really?
Yeah, I played.
Oh, that's great. That's right.
I played.
You were in the call. I wasn't in that one, but I just
Dana.
Loved it.
It was almost jury duty. It was everybody. It was Ellen DeGeneres, Phil Hartman, Sinbad, Schneider, Sandler.
I was too big. I was too big at the time, and I had a beach house, and I didn't really.
I was turning down a lot of things.
I'm just processing this idea of when it came out. The idea that the character's name was what the character was. So the Coneheads had Coneheads. So I always loved that. And that's why I said the church lady is the church lady, you know, or
what people would
Dr. Evil's
Dr.
Evil.
You see that sketch where he plays like a church lady?
Right.
Did Carol Burnett and Flip Wilson or whatever, did they do that? Because that was the first time I saw it. It's a certain knowing dry silliness that the character's name is what the character is. Does that predate SNL? But I love that about Coneheads.
I don't know.
You don't know the answer.
I don't know, Dana. I don't know what happened with Flip Wilson.
Exactly.
I love all those variety shows.
They were great.
Lorraine, do you laugh when you're going to do Coneheads in rehearsal? Does it kill at the table or where is there any weirdness along the week going, what if this just does not work?
I adored Danny's writing. Absolutely adored it. And he could do no wrong as far as I was concerned. Even if it was like something really subtle and tasty that I knew the audience would not get, that was fine with me.
That is fun too. Because you know, some of those sketches, you're like, I don't care how it does. I love it. We need to do it. And Lauren's good at keeping stuff like that on. He's like,
yes.
I don't care if it doesn't work. This represents us. That's a good sketch. Jack Handy used to write a lot of really weird ones, and we all loved him at read through. And he goes, put it on.
That's part of the magic of the show is that sensibility is allowed, even if it doesn't kill. And yeah, Dan Aykroyd would write these long, he would talk really super fast and have all this language coming out.
God damn.
Of him, you know? And you'd have to just figure out later what he was saying. But the Coneheads was silly, and it was, I mean, how many times did you think you did that? It seemed like it was on a lot.
Gosh, I do not know. I just know that the one time that we did an extended version where we filmed us going back to Remulac.
Remulac. Yeah.
We had never been in the cones longer than the length of a sketch, but this was like a whole day. And the spirit gum.
Fuck.
Started to burn. You know, this is where it was anchored here.
Unproven.
Here,
spirit, yeah, starts
here.
To burn your skin.
Oh, my God. And so, you know, Jane and Danny were in the front seat, and they just started smoking weed. And I was in the back seat, and weed
was
just... Oh,
you were on location or something?
Yes, we were shooting on location.
At Remulac?
I'd be terrified.
It was all improvised, too, because, you know, we didn't get permits. We went to a gas station to fill the tank.
He was walking around.
You know, Danny did a bit of drinking the gasoline. But, you know, it was like guerrilla because we got no permits or anything like that.
And you're in your outfit. You're a giant head and everything walking around.
I got a question. When you do Coneheads, Did you have to do it either cold open or after update because there's so much
work?
It
was always at the top of the show.
When I did Gap Girls, it was so much work. They could only put it first or after update because that's the biggest chunk. You have update and music, and that's like 12 minutes or something.
And did you get stoned that day then?
No,
with
I didn't.
Danny?
I never
was able to perform high. I mean, I tried it with a couple beers once out of
nerves. Me neither.
Tried stone once, didn't work
well,
for
you
me.
Well, you know, heroin is good for doing sketch work, you know, dear.
I think the meth is what makes James Woods. The meth is what informs his choices. Marcy, please, more popcorn. Anyway.
But, you know, that thing that you said about Lauren is very astute because that is what causes an audience to come to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's like you don't write for them. You let them come. You write for us.
Yeah.
And you let them come to you.
And some things like cheeseburger, one of those, like that might not work the first time. There's a lot of sketches that might not work. And then by the time it comes on, you don't realize they really did like it. They had to watch it and think about it. And then their friends talk about it and you go, that is good. It's kind of hooky, or even if it's not a catchphrase, just a smart bit. And then you go, oh, fuck, that's bigger than
I thought.
But
also that was active and high energy. And I've said this before, but for me personally, when I was doing Johnny Carson on the show and sort of a new wave.
It's a great impression, by the way.
Thank you. Kind of my favorite thing because I thought I enjoyed it so much. And I had Phil, of course, there.
You are correct, sir.
Those of you at home who you're watching a television, and that's how you're seeing the pictures. We are not actively in your living room. You know,
Johnny would include everyone in the country in on stuff. Yeah. And I didn't care. And I was in my sixth season or something, but I wasn't thinking whether it was going to get a laugh because I intrinsically knew it was so fucking, it was almost too funny. Some things that I'll watch sometimes are so funny that I know I can't even laugh as hard as I want to laugh. I'm going to laugh later.
Because you want to hear it.
I want to hear it, and it hits you so hard. But the rock and roll sketches are easier.
It was, or you look at an old sketch, like even from Lorraine's seasons, and you go, I didn't even really get that back then, like how funny it was. Like I was too young, and now you look back and you go, holy shit, that's so well done or smart or... Because I was just like looking for the easy jokes. I'm younger, you know, and then you get older and you start to like different stuff. But you go back and go, oh, fuck, that was so good.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I've experienced that, too.
Yeah.
Did you go on update a lot and do characters?
I did it a couple of times when when Sid Vicious murdered his girlfriend.
There's a hilarious topic. Go ahead.
I went on as his mother, saying that he was a good boy, you know. And I think Brian was Sid Vicious, you know, and he just had the wig on and he just looked completely mad, you know, and I was just going on. I did my best, you know.
I did my best. I don't know. I don't know. We've had a great time here.
Oh, my God.
We had a great
Michael
chat.
Caine.
And
I
don't
but then, know. Of course, I did the reporter, you know, Lorraine Newman, the reporter.
Which was kind of in that sort of reporter dialect, in a sense, the language of breaking news right now, this at the whole, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Chubby, I'm standing here. You know, I always had heard, you know, I heard that song and, you know what I'm talking about, Dana, the song that they do that is a newscaster song.
Oh, right, that. Yeah.
Well no, the song in their
news. The voice.
In their dial.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, got it. Yes, it is.
Oh, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, it is a song.
I did it in stand-up, and I don't know if I got it from Robert Klein, but it was a newsman ordering dinner with his wife, if I can remember. It was like, a surprise, kind of on my wife tonight. He's at a restaurant. She'll have the steak, medium rare, and a cup of black coffee instead of the traditional cream and sugar.
I saw that bit.
You did? I must have done it on a talk show or something. I could have done it on a talk show or stand-up.
That's a great bit.
I'm like you. I love all voices. I love all dialects. Yeah. And I so enjoy when I see people do them on Saturday Night Live. The new young cast member does a Trump that is so brilliant.
Oh, my God.
And I just, that's like so funny and so brilliant. I have to like watch it later almost because he's doing so many hooks, excuse me, and the people, a lot of people, they're saying many, and he's doing
his
all that
Biden
stuff.
His Biden is great, too. His Biden is just,
come on,
his debut.
This is good stuff. We can do this. We can do it. No, here's the deal. My father lost his job. I'm not kidding around here. We can, in fact, do better. We can.
Whispers, I'm out of my mind.
Listen, let me smell your hair.
Biden is an interesting one. You know, the evolution of doing a president is that the country still has to get used to Biden. The kind of defensive guy is come out a little bit angry and then befuddled all the different flavors he has, but we're still discovering him, the whisper thing.
Yes.
And then he goes kind of loud.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Sort of my dad would do that when he was 90. It was kind of a patronizing whisper because I know what I'm doing.
Oh, man.
That's right. We can do this. Come on. And number one, the one part. Number two, what the guy said. Number three, come on, folks. He's always admonishing us for not understanding. It's not rocket science.
There's some really, really interesting new cast members.
Yeah, Chloe Fineman.
She's a groundling. She's a friend of my daughter Hannah's. Been telling me about her for years.
So I watched your daughter today. She's really, really funny and talented.
Thank
I just saw her
so
on
much.
Colbert because I knew I was going to be talking to you. And yes. She reminds me of you. There's a droll,
really?
Dry. Yeah, I mean, there's just a. Well, I would just say this: her stuff is very smart. You know.
Thank you. Yes, we're just, you know, beside ourselves.
She belongs there. I mean, she's going to, she is having a career. She's on Hacks now.
Yes.
And she's just really good. And so I can't imagine what that must feel like to have a daughter, have someone have success because you look at her mom and now you're the daughter and it's following a big act to follow and she's doing great.
Great
well,
job.
Her talent is completely different than mine. And my older child's talent is also, they started doing stand-up when they were 15. And they're on Los Espookys, Julio's show.
Mm.
Their talent is completely different than mine. And that is exciting to watch. But,
yeah.
You know, my only contribution really was, and this is so inappropriate, but when I was driving them to school, I mean, this is like grade school.
Mm-hmm.
I would play the Sklar brothers and Maria Bamford and Patton Oswalt, you know.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I mean,
Maria,
you know, because mommy needed to be entertained, damn it.
Yeah.
You know, I was not going to listen to Radio fucking Disney another second, you know.
Oh, so, you gave him some good stand-ups. Wow.
Yeah.
But your daughter, when she came on Colbert the first time, this is Hannah, she did kind of like a little story about her mom and dad and sperm donors and stuff. And it was very, very sketch. That's why it wasn't traditional stand-up. That's why it reminded me of
yeah,
your style.
Yeah, she's very different. And I
but
saw
different.
Her set at Dynasty Typewriter this last Sunday, and it was pretty much new material and 40-minute set, and it was so good and so interesting. And it's like, how the hell did you come up with that stuff? You know.
Interesting. Wow. Well, that's a great way to close the podcast because that's like this gigantic, perfect full circle.
Yeah.
Talking about that and, you know, the apple does not fall very far from the tree, you'll find. But
Lorraine,
anyway, that's very sweet, Lorraine. I'm
you
so
too,
happy.
David.
I think I met one of your daughters or both of them at that Al Franken thing we did.
It was probably Hannah.
Probably Hannah. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's, you know, whatever, just a sweet little girl.
Yeah.
But now she's, oh, that's cool. Well, I've really enjoyed this a lot.
This was
I hope
so
you
fun,
did.
You guys. I really did. And thank you for having me, too. And good luck with it. I know it's a really fun thing to do.
Fly on the Wall has been a presentation of Cadence 13.
Please listen, then rate, review, and follow all episodes.
Executive produced by Dana Carvey and David Spade, Chris Corcoran of Cadence 13, and Charlie Finan of Brillstein Entertainment. Production and engineering led by Greg Holtzman, Richard Cook, Serena Regan, and Chris Basil of Cadence 13.